Hello and welcome to the Muppets Mayhem Backstage Pass, the unofficial companion podcast to the Muppets Mayhem, presented by ToughPigs.com. This is the podcast where we tour through every episode of the Muppets Mayhem to uncover behind-the-scenes stories, Easter eggs, and more with the talented cast and crew who helped put the series together. I'm your host, dedicated Mayhead Joe Hennis. Today, we are talking about track 5, Break On Through, in which the band gets writer's block and goes on one heck of a trip. This week, we have a few return guests and one newbie. First up, he's co-creator and executive producer of The Muppets Mayhem. Please welcome Jeff Yorks back to the podcast. Hey, Jeff.
Thank you for having me. Oh, thank you, Bill. I see you. Peter, if there was a video, you would see that everyone is applauding and possibly standing up. Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Wow. Huge, huge reaction for Jeff. Next up, he's another co-creator and executive producer, as well as Dr. Teeth's number one pal. Please welcome Bill Beretta back to the podcast. Hey, Bill.
Applaud for myself. Hi.
Hi, Bill.
For myself.
We're all clapping. Everyone at home is clapping as well. Our final guest is lending his puppet wiggling skills to the most misunderstood member of the Electric Mayhem. Please welcome Peter Linz to the podcast. Hey, Peter.
Hi. Oh, thank you. Wow. No, guys, please. You're embarrassing. Bill, come on.
Oh, so kind.
Guys. No, sit. You can sit down now. Guys, come on. Oh, look, your families are coming out too. This is too much.
Such a joy to have you here, Peter. Can't wait to talk about Lips with you. There's so much to say, but before we do, I would love to know when you first heard about the Muppets Mayhem, that the project was happening, and if you had any first reactions just hearing that there was going to be an Electric Mayhem series.
Skepticism.
Tell me more.
Really?
No, I mean, things come up all the time. You don't want to get your hopes up too high, you know, because this is, I know Jeff has said in many interviews, it has been his dream to have a Mayhem series and have an album. Ditto since I was a little kid, huge ditto. I could never get enough. You know, River Bottom Nightmare Band was close. I wanted an album from those guys too. They were amazing. Totally. Same guys. So yeah, for sure, skepticism. And then I didn't really hang my hat on this thing actually happening until we were there filming on stage day one. It was so huge to me that I didn't want to have my heart broken.
You had a big, tall order to handle for the first time.
This was the other thing about this, is Bill said to me many months before, he just comes up in his sweet Billy way and said, Petey, what do you think? I'm thinking about it. What do you think if Lips is a mumbler? And I said, what, Bill? What do you think if Lips is a mumbler? What, Bill? I can't. No, and I.
I thought, as we all know, Bill is famously quiet. Yeah.
No, and so that was a whole new thing too, because you know this character, the puppet's been around for like 45 years, almost as long as the band, and he has never had much of a voice. He has had a voice a couple of times in the past, most notably in 2015, but this was something totally new and different. So it was exciting. I loved the idea, but then you know, where do you go with that? There's a lot of different ways to mumble.
You know, it's funny. It was he's probably most Lips is most representative of doing this show, where you know these characters a little bit, but you could truly flesh them out. He's the extreme, I should say, of it. Yeah. Where there really was just, we could go anywhere with Lips, and we had a blast sort of talking about where he could be. Ironically, talking about where he could go, and when we settle on this, there are other attributes I think we had come up with, but those maybe fell by the wayside for now. But yeah, it was just so much fun. And then I don't think we heard you.
Well, I remember Peter and I were talking a little bit about how to approach this mumbler, you know, and we have, you know, three gruffy, you know, ruffy voices in this group, all raspy. And so we talked about maybe staying away from that, you know, should he be whispery, bro? And then Peter did this bass thing, you know, because Peter has such an amazing bass baritone voice. And as soon as he did the mumbling with that, I was like, oh my God, that's if you can play with that, if that feels good.
I came to Bill with a few different options, and you know, I didn't want it to be derivative of anything. There are characters out there in pop culture who are mumblers, and I didn't want it to sound like that. And it was a challenge. One of the first things early on, this is like a couple of years ago, we were just, the six of us were talking about the band and about what could have possibly happened with Lips. And there was, when I was a teenager, my first car I bought from this guy was a Toyota specialist. He like used Toyotas. And this was in, of course, I grew up in Atlanta, and a wonderful, wonderful man named Sonny. And Sonny had a place called Sonny Service Center. And he would always answer the phone. And I was like, oh, hi, Sonny. Oh, Bill, good. So that was kind of the jumping off point for me.
How often were you calling him?
Well, it was my first car, and you know, I had to bring it in for oil changes.
Sonny didn't do just cars.
Apparently, I would hope not. I remember Bill would come back to the writer's room. He's like, yeah, I spoke to Peter, and he's got this really great idea of what he's doing for Lips. And then just describe it. It's based on this guy that he knew growing up. And we're like, okay, sounds great. But I don't think Adam and I heard it until you did him on the set. You performed him on the set.
Yeah, right. Because we also then started talking about, well, we had a read through of some kind, didn't we?
That's true.
But okay, but I think we started talking in the writer's room about the idea that he knows everyone, wherever that came from, that he was their connection to the world in a sense, that he was the only guy that probably has a phone and everybody loves Lips.
Yeah,
everybody has met him in some way. He's the connection, you know, and we thought that was kind of a fun thing to explore.
Yeah, especially the irony of him being unintelligible, and yet he would know and have this connection with everyone.
Some of my favorite humor that came out of that was how Lips knew everybody else, and it was never musical. It was always good that it wasn't musical, but it was like, okay, it was my nanny. There was a joke that got lost. I took elocution lessons from him, which that's my personal favorite, I think. Anything I do. Or if you ever you come up with them, where like, oh, he taught me a foreign language, he taught me Spanish.
Were you Sophia Carson's nanny?
Is that her nanny?
Nanny. So Sophia Carson's nanny. Right. Oh, here's a little tidbit. So when Lips talks about Sophia Carson, he calls her Bebo. And he says, hey guys, but basically what he's saying underneath the mumbling is, let's give Bebo and Zed the song.
Right. Mm.
Let's give Sophia Carson, and I say Bebo. Bebo is what I call my stepson.
Oh.
And then when we watched it together, I said, Bennett, that's you. You're Bebo.
Now, I do want to talk about something else, you know, because I guess one of the things that got a little screwy with our closed captioning was that it gave Lips dialogue.
Yeah.
Now, as writers, we never wrote Lips's dialogue. It truly just had gibberish. I mean, and we did painstakingly. Yeah. Write out gibberish.
It was beautiful gibberish. Bill came to me day one. He's like, Petey, we wrote in stuff, but you don't have to say that. You just say whatever you want. But it's just a placeholder.
Yeah. And so what was your take on how you made this dialogue your own? I mean, you knew the intention, I would assume.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you get the intention had to be there. And so, I just took that from the scene, you know, from whatever was happening.
Right.
And truthfully, it evolved as we shot the series. And I know early on, Matt Sohn, who's our wonderful director, our first director, we were having dinner together a couple episodes in. And he said, you know, Lips is getting like more and more understandable. It's like, oh gosh, I didn't realize I was doing that. So that's not good. Hmm. So I started curbing that and trying to be less intelligible. And Bill, I remember bringing that up to you, and you're like, no, I think it's because you were watching the edits. And he's like, I think it's a good balance. So for me,
and then we discovered that you actually ended up looping a couple things, right? We went back, and actually there were a couple that we ended up using that did feel a bit too understandable.
There were two on the nose.
Yeah, a little bit, right? And we went back and did those. But for the most part, you just grew into this amazing character.
It definitely grew. And what I hope an unintentional consequence of this is that I hope that as people watch the series, hopefully more than once, that each time they see it, they're going to glean a little bit more and a little more clarity about what it is exactly Lips is saying. Because there are some very specific things.
I wish we could share some great Lips outtakes. Some of his interpretations of dialogue are pretty amazing.
One in particular I remember because it made the scene blow up. It was during Get Back. Is it Get Back? The documentary episode,
which
we're not talking about right now. But everyone's saying they call me flighty and something, both true. They call me whatever, not true. And then you go to Lips, and I think what ended up is they call me a chrysanthemum, which is a suggestion that Alice made to me based on a classic literature. I don't remember much. But anyway, but one that I came up with and just did on the spot is, they said they had a hand up beside me. And you know, Teeth has the next line, well, Lips, sometimes a man's got it, and then Lips just collapsed and Bill was in bits of giggles. You can't say
that's amazing. Bill, did you have tips for Peter from your experience as the Swedish chef for how to do the right kind of, like, well, you get the intention, but also we don't want anyone to actually understand what he says?
No, Peter knows. You know, Peter knows exactly what to do. I didn't have to talk about any of that stuff. We just talked about character. That was all
about character and a little
getting
bit
of Tim to a comfortable place where he felt good. That was it.
And vocal quality. Bill, I mean, you held my hand, you know, 13 years ago with Walter as well, you know. You are the wind beneath my legs, my friend. You just, what?
Oh, what? Who? Inside the puppets?
You're like in the Marilyn Monroe dress, and Bill is a gust of wind between your legs.
Bill is the sewer grate.
That's right.
Wow, well, so kind.
In that instance, I don't know if you want to just say it, because when he was coming up with Walter, he was playing around with things, and I just kept hearing Peter as Walter, you know, and I think that was probably a bigger challenge than coming up with another voice, right, Peter?
Yes. That was that was one of my biggest character challenges I've ever had as a puppeteer, is performing a character with this voice.
As you said, right?
Yeah, that was a big block to get over. Yeah,
sorry about that.
Let's get into the episode at hand. The cold open of this episode features the mayhem in the van. They're all wearing neck braces because they've been headbanging too much. Doctor says they're not allowed to headbang again until they're healed. But Dr. Teeth says, I said no such thing, which I thought was a funny joke.
I love the way Lily plays that next line, which is the way she goes, no, the doctor, you know, I can't do it. But I just thought the way she plays that.
She plays it, so, and she like kind of does this half eye roll. I mean,
yeah.
She's just like, doctor. Giving up trying to even talk to
idiots. Right. Yeah.
There's hard rock music playing, and everyone is shaking, almost vibrating, trying to resist the urge to headbang. And then you all start
not just
headbanging.
Any hard rock. It is it's Metallica's Master of Puppets.
Oh, is
See
it?
How everybody noticed, Jeff. See how everybody got that.
Everybody got it. Everyone totally.
I bet people got it. I am of the correct generation to get the reference, but I was so not a Metallica fan, and I avoided Metallica growing up.
It's from the soundtrack of Stranger Things. but yeah, Metallica had to watch this. Metallica watched the cut, or Metallica's people, but I'd like to think it's Metallica.
Yeah, they all sat around
and they approved it.
Yeah,
they thought it was great,
amazing.
But again, that's another little Easter egg detail that Jeff and Adam, you know, they would come up with such great ideas that, of course, that title, that song works perfect, you know.
And if you know, you know.
Yeah.
If you know, you know. And if you don't, like I didn't know, then it's still funny because they're headbanging to Metallica going ow, 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 which was,
to be honest, hysterical. Up until like I think maybe a few weeks before we locked, it was just rando heavy metal song.
Yeah. It's just a temp.
Yeah.
Is it hard to perform characters who can't move their necks?
They can move their necks.
Well, in the scene, they're all wearing neck braces.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, but there's enough give.
They still can move.
Fair enough. Yeah.
It's make believe, Joe. It's make believe, Joe.
It's what?
They're not really. Yeah, they're not.
Peter,
really
is it
in
difficult for you to get into the Lips costume?
I don't understand.
It's a soft kind
of
material.
How big of a trailer do you need to fit into the
band? They're not real. They're not.
No.
Oh, they're real.
I don't mean the band.
Okay.
I don't mean the band.
Okay, good. Okay, good.
I had so many people ask me if the show was animated before they saw it. Oh, you're working on an animated show?
That's a little teaser for something that comes up later in this episode. The band has been workshopping some songs. They've got a few beginnings, a few middles, a few endings. I tried to like transcribe this stuff because I wanted to relay it on the podcast, and there's no way I can imitate these because they're all great. They're all terrific beginnings, middles, and ends. Who wrote these for you guys?
I think it started with me and Adam just being sort of punch drunk in the writer's room. Again, this was during production, I think, at this point. So, and we were busy rewriting. And yeah, I just have, you know, iPhone voice memos of just us making up these things. And then we'd send it to Ed and Steve to sweeten them up.
Well, they kind of made the tune, right? They did the...
We had little bits of tunes and stuff like that. But they definitely crystallized.
Added the melodies and stuff. And
you've got voice memos where you're just going like, bum-ba-dum-bum-bum, like that kind of thing.
Middle of the song.
They should have put that on the soundtrack.
You know, I'm hoping one day they'll release the basement tapes like Bob Dylan did, and we would just have digital or even just like a, you know, an EP of just all these little tracklets, if you will.
Yeah, Moz Soup.
Soup-de-doop, Moz Soup. I mean, they're fun. Yeah. All these like little jingles and stuff like that.
Yeah. We want to hear them. Yeah.
Beginnings, middles, and ends.
Do you have a real answer for who is Johnny Ragsdale?
I think we have several verses of.
Really? You started writing the story of Johnny Ragsdale?
I don't think it got that far. but it was always fun to sing while we were writing.
Great. Season two, we need an origin story for Johnny Ragsdale. So as the band is playing, none of these songs are really going together. Dr. Teeth can't commit to anything. Floyd's a perfectionist. He thinks it's all a big old stinking pile of stink. Janice is busy helping everyone else, but not helping with the songs. She starts a massage circle, which is a cute little visual. So Nora asks them how they wrote Can You Picture That?, which, as we all know, is a classic. It's the best-known song from the Electric Mayhem. And they confirm that they did indeed write it. So my question is, does Paul Williams not exist in this universe?
Well, they collaborated. Years later, Paul made it a better song. Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah.
Paul made it a better song. Yeah.
Great. So I guess he was with them when Dr. Teeth says they wrote it under the stars in the great outdoors many a moon ago.
That's where the inspiration came from, right? But you could say that the ultimate song eventually was a collaboration with Paul, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, we're calling it. It's canon.
And again, there's no such thing as Muppets canon. So
unless Gonzo's inside of it, then there's a Muppet canon. Right.
Correct.
Nora suggests they go camping out in Joshua Tree to start to grease those creative gears. Animal flips out over the concept of a road trip, and we're going on a road trip. That's exciting, just like the Muppets do in the Muppet movie. We love a Muppet road trip.
By the way, going back and forth, when Dr. T says he can't commit to anything, let's just move in and get a little puppy, right? And we could get
Penelope, pop.
That's a pure improvisation from the mad minds of Bill Beretta and Mr. Dave Goals.
More Dave Goals. He's the sick one.
And that was something that Adam and I just saw in dailies in the editing room. And we're like, well, this is absolutely going in and we want to extend it. And can you now ADR more?
Great.
That's why you hear in the background. That's why you hear
because it keeps going. You don't want to have it stop and cut out. You want to have them still going because they're like, going. What's going on here?
Yeah. Well, Dave got such a kick out of that. He wanted to just do that all day long. That was his thing.
And he did.
I love that. That is such a Dave Goals thing. Especially because Zoot is so low energy. And just to stand there and just name pee names for dogs.
Just name
forever. Yep. Yeah. Terrific. Yeah. We get a great shot of the Mayhem's van cruising down a desert highway with animals shouting out of the sunroof.
Can I add one little thing to this bit?
Yeah. Yeah, go for it.
You know, I would watch sound mixes or listen to sound mixes at home. And I have two little kids and I never wanted to show them the show until it was complete. But this one, they sort of walked in and so they checked it out and they see the van go by. And my son, who's 10, just says, I think there should be tumbleweed there. And I was like, That's a great idea. And so I guess in that moment, I sort of promised him tumbleweed and he would only ask about it every day forward. Show's going really well. We're working on did you get the tumbleweed in there? So anyway, I had to call, you know, I was just like, hey, I would really love for there to be tumbleweed in this shot. Just going across the screen and we got a cut and there it was, tumbleweed. And I never told him about it. And then when the show came out on May 10th and we binged the show, I was like, good. And he watched it and he just looked at me with wide eyes and just such joy that he was able to contribute to the show in some small way.
That's great.
Was that like a $10,000 tumbleweed in the end?
They did mention a price at some point.
I don't know, but they did a great job. It looks real. It
looks so real. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he's like, you know, I have a note.
Too late.
No notes.
Inside the van, Animal and Lips are both sleeping on Moog's shoulders.
That was fun to set up. We just tried to find the most awkward, just torment Taj as much as we could for that shot. And I mean, Eric got in there first with his mouth right in his ear.
Yeah.
This was one of the shots I was on set for. So I got to watch you guys filming this bit. And I just remember the two of you trying desperately to get Taj to laugh. From, like you say, just breathing in his ear, like snuggling up right in the crook of his arm. It was very funny. And Moog is just so happy to be tagging along. Like, he's got a big smile on his face. And also he can't feel his arms or body. Which I love that line reading that he did. Taj is good at his job.
It's great. And I think it's an Adam absurdity. Like you would say, I can't feel my arms or legs. But Adam just takes it in this weird place, you know, my arms and body. And it's just, I don't know, which what makes him a great writer.
He plays it with painful joy, you know, which is so good.
This is also what it's like being a fanatic, where like sometimes, you know, we're in an uncomfortable position, but I get to be here. Like, how cool is that? He gets it.
Yeah.
It's good that you were there for that one thing that was actually shot on the stage, because primarily the rest of the episode is shot on the volume. We went to a different studio entirely and shot the whole thing on like one of those, you know, Mandalorian like digital spaces.
VR wall.
It was going to be an entire night shoot, right? It's a night in the life of, and you certainly don't want to be out in the middle of the desert for an all-nighter. And
we talked about a couple days out in Joshua Tree, what that might be like, but that didn't last very long.
Yeah.
I was bummed too because I'd never been to Joshua Tree. I still haven't, and I was
virtually
Joshua Tree. This will be so. I've been there virtually. It looks a lot like Santa Clarita.
But it's pretty cool. I mean, I walked in there and it's just like I saw the back of just this digital wall, and it just looks like a bunch of monitors from behind, just stacked up and just plugs and blue lights. And then walking around and seeing, oh my God, they're in the desert. And it's a trip, literally, no pun intended. It's just to see it, like you forget about it because you're on there and for 180 degrees, you're seeing this desert night, you know, and you lose track of time.
And the ceiling too, like above, the light matches. So all the reflections are true.
Yeah.
You know,
the actual set, and if, I don't know if people know out there, they're listening, but like we did on Muppets Haunted Mansion, we also used an AR wall. For a lot of our sets, but they have to build a complete computer generated set, right? So first they build an entire desert 360 degrees where certain trees live and certain rocks live and where's the shack metal thing going to be. And so that can be rotated and moved on this volume depending on which way you're shooting, right? So you're always, cameras are always facing one way, but the world can spin, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah,
it's fascinating.
As a matter of fact, I think the van is in the background shots is digital.
It's digital.
At night, at night, when they first arrive, it's the actual van. They had the van jacked up, so it was up high. But then when they're camping at night, it's a virtual van in the background.
Yeah, it's a virtual van. And the first shot when the van pulls up, is all created in the computer. That's another soapbox thing. That giant wide shot. Is
the amazing. Other wild thing is when you're in that volume and the camera, you know, the camera is pointed at this video wall. And so you can imagine the amount of video wall it sees is a rectangle on the back wall. And as the camera moves, you can see this rectangle on this giant wall moving around and rendering in real time. So it's always there. So the camera points, it's there, but it's tied into the camera so that I don't know.
It matches focal length.
The set moves the focal with length. The camera.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, exactly. So you see this rectangle moving across this giant void, and that's exactly the background that the camera is seeing as it moves.
Wow.
And in real time, you can move, they could move that van or the van to another
spot.
They could take elements. Move a boulder or they can move a tree and they can change it if we need, you know, the shot's not going to work because we have this big tree here. Well, let's move it over 15 feet. Nobody will be able to tell. So it's just amazing. It's such an amazing thing to
I had so many notes to ask you about the trees that moved 15 feet over. It really bothered me actually that these trees, I didn't notice any of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the only thing that truly exists in front of the wall are just there are, you know, the ground is real and there's some brush and some rocks and whatever, you know, the performers are, you know, or the characters are sitting on and it's raised. So obviously, so the performers can perform.
Yeah.
Wow. Pretty cool. That's great. Yeah. Technology. So the characters arrive at this desert oasis, but it's just this tin shack in the middle of the deserts, but it's really just a wall and a door because there are no walls. Janice finds a bag of marshmallows and a shovel. It is not a grave digging shovel. It's a shovel for
poop-a-doom-booms.
I can't believe that got through the censors.
I'll take credit for that word. That was my word.
Nice.
Do you use that word a lot at home?
Oops. No, it was just for lips.
Great.
We did it. We had one note about the shovel. Remember the note, Bill?
No.
It could not be dirty or crusty.
Oh, that's right. Didn't have anything on it. Yeah. That's
right. A clean poom-a-doom boom shovel.
Relatively, clean.
Got it. Yep. The band builds a campfire. I got big. Gonna go back there someday vibes from this campfire at night scene with all the Muppets sitting around. I assume that was not intentional because this is part of the story. Yeah. Worth asking.
We just felt know. I think it was a great way to get everybody sitting around and contemplating their, you know, struggle. Yeah, and how to create and having their problems with the music. And it was great to see them full body. I think we were looking for a nice kind of establishing tableau of the desert where you see them sitting together and, you know, hanging out. So it was just really about that intention, I think.
Yeah, especially the full body thing is cool when Janice suggested everyone starts dancing and we see, you know, Floyd and Lips are swaying around with their arms in the air. And like, it's such a small little puppet moment, but I appreciate that kind of stuff. You know, you've matted out the puppeteers. You know, there's obviously some choreography going on. It's not a huge gag. It's not a huge special effects thing, but it looks pretty.
Well, I mean, at the big campfire, it was quite a big effect thing because the characters whose backs are to camera are coming in from underneath, right? So there, you don't see the puppeteers, but all the other characters on the other side that are facing camera, there were puppeteers in green suits behind everybody. So all of that had to be cleaned up and taken away. So it was quite a feat, actually.
Sure, yeah. Happen. Yeah, worth it. It looks gorgeous, yeah. Nora thinks everyone should be opening up so that we can start getting creative again, get over this writer's block. So she starts off by listing off some of her hopes and fears. She says, is it too much to ask? I just want to spread my wings and fly, for I am a falconer like my father before me. His name was Parvesh, and I am his daughter, Nora the Falconer, master of the air beasts. I loved it. I loved that slow and steady incline toward insanity. Is Parvesh her father's name, or is this the Falconer? That wasn't improv, was it?
She couldn't have been so good in this moment, and...
No, she went with Parvesh, though.
I wish almost that we had written more where she could just go crazy like this, because she just, when you allow her to, she goes there, you know?
Sure.
I remember in our auditions, you know, she was just like not afraid to go to these places. And this is one of those where she's just like, how about I do it like this? I mean, the outtakes themselves are just amazing. Yeah.
Show us those outtakes.
And she's doing it half the time with a real falcon on her arm. You know?
With a real falcon on her arm.
Clam up.
Yeah.
So it too.
Was there a training that she had to go through to be able to have a falcon on her arm safely?
During that day, that morning, they spent time, you know, making sure that she understood what she needed to do and not, but she's yelling. I mean, I just kept thinking, she's yelling at this poor Falcon. It's got to be freaking out.
It's going to like claw her eye out or something.
Yeah.
You know?
But she handled it beautifully. It was great.
Yeah.
No, that's terrific. Yeah, I would also be terrified having that thing on my arm. But Moog notices these marshmallows that everyone's eating expired in 1992. He tosses them into the fire, bursts into a big green flame. I assume that's a digital effect, not a practical one.
Yeah, we wanted it to look a little otherworldly. Something's definitely strange happening. I will point out, you know, this was one of the ideas from the beginning. We wanted to do this episode where they trip in the desert, just at, like, you know, the doors break on through, right? And they go on this, you know, dreamscape or whatever. But we never got pushback. A bunch of people asked, like, Disney was cool with this, and they totally were. I think the thing was, like, they're not taking these things voluntarily, you know? Like, this is purely an accident.
Yeah.
And it was food.
And it's food. But it wasn't like, hey, let's sit down and, you know, eat these tainted marshmallows that are going to take us on a journey.
Yeah. Right.
They're just eating marshmallows. It's just so hot. But I was, like, ready to, like, argue, like, you know, well, what about the good dinosaur? He eats berries and they go, they trip, you know? But it never got there.
And Disney said, what's the good dinosaur?
Exactly.
Right.
That's the worst evidence ever.
It also, I appreciate, you know, the 2015 Muppets sitcom, you know, there's Mayhem has a lot of references to doing drugs. And of course, they're all thinly veiled. But like, although there's the barest of reference to that in this series, we never cross that line. Like, we never confirm.
I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of that at all. That is something they never went there. I'm kind of adamant about that. And I like that it's marshmallows.
Yeah.
That's it. End of story.
Marshmallows and nations.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Jeff. Yeah. Thank you.
Great word. That's your word, Jeff.
That's my word. I fought for it and so many giraffes. The characters were saying, I was so proud of it. But some of our writers, their tolerance for my puns just diminished over time. And so as we got to the, no, I will not. I will, we, I, because this episode is written by Julie Bean.
Julie,
so fantastic. But she was like, I do not want that in my script. I will take my name. And so it never saw the light of day.
Well, it's here in this podcast now. Yes. Now everyone knows.
Marshmallow hallucination. No one could say it. No one wanted to say it.
I think the Giacchinos have it as the title of the music happening behind
it's
all.
It's one of the tracks. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Wonderful track.
Yep.
Yeah, it's in there. It's
well, Giacchino loves a good pun. So all his tracks on all his albums, Michael at least, are all puns. It's just like the Batman movies, the most serious sounding soundtrack, but then like its tracks are just all these silly puns. And I think Rogue One was the only one where it came out and they're just like, you can't, it's Star Wars, you can't do it. But if you flip the insert of the album, you know, on the CD, so on one side it's like, you know, but a Jyn Erso's quest, but on the other side it's just like, you know, it's from the beginning or whatever it is. Anyway,
great.
We'll save that for the commentary of Rogue One.
That'll be next month's podcast. We'll do that. The first Mayhem member who really trips out here is Lips. And his eyes go wide. We see his eyes for the first time since Great Muppet Caper. And he can see all of the cosmos, planets and the stars and the space whale and the swine trek.
And the swine trek.
What a great Easter egg. That was a great Easter egg.
My favorite moment, I think, honestly, like I think about when you look for great puppetry moments or performance moments, and when he falls back and has that, he's breathing and his stomach is going, it's so good.
Yeah,
like, you know, there is a panic there. Like he saw what we just saw, you know? And I'm so happy we used that take and that you did it that way. You know, it was just, cause I know you tried different things, but I just think it's so good. So great.
Thanks, Billy.
Yeah.
Peter, do you want to say anything about this scene about Lips freaking out and looking into space?
Well, I just remember there was a lot of conversations and photos and options for what do his eyes look like.
Yeah. There are a lot of different variations of, I actually have some pictures on my phone of different ones that we tried out that did not look good.
I mean, no matter what, even this one is going to look,
they're all going to, it's going to look freaky no matter what. It's going to look freaky, but to what degree of freaky do we want for this guy?
Right. Yeah.
I don't have too much to say about this one, except that I was, thank you for saying that, Bill. I was also proud of the way that I got up, because, you know, he's kind of slouched over a log and he has to stand
up.
He
got up.
What are the mechanics of getting up from a squatting position in a hurry to see something cool or interesting or whatever? So that was, and then Bill was, of course, I wasn't actually seeing anything. So Bill was describing what it was.
But there's no doubt he's got legs and he's got hips and he's got weight to him. You know, it's all there. Yeah. So great.
Peter, when you're doing a scene like that and you have, you know, you're worrying about your, like a big performance, you're controlling Lips and, you know, his two hands, and you want him to breathe heavily, do you call in a second puppeteer to assist you for something?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't remember on the day if Alice was doing the right hand. I'm sorry, we did so much. I don't know. And I may have used my left hand to try to get that breathing going, with like putting my left hand up underneath his shirt to make his belly go.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't recall.
Yeah. It could have even been Peter. I don't remember it, but it could have been two people helping you, because his arms are kind of like this.
But yeah. He's not splayed out. That's right. That's right.
And so you may have had two helping or something. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't ever hesitate to. Yeah. avail myself of the services of our other performers.
You have a great support team with the rest of the Muppet performers there with you. Lips also in the stars, see the stars spell out the words "Save the World, Lips." So now Lips has a task. He has a mission that'll carry him through the end of the season. I can't wait to see him save the world, because that will surely happen in the next five episodes. Right? Right, guys? Right?
I feel like he does. Yeah.
Do you? Okay. Let's all
good. Mission accomplished. Yeah.
Great. We'll check in with Janice. She is looking at herself in the side mirror of the van, saying that this person looks familiar, and then suddenly finds herself in a white void, surrounded by hundreds of identical Janices who all tell her that she needs to love herself. How many Janices...
How many Janices? There were two Janices.
There were two Janice puppets.
And the main one... And the main one was being puppeteered by Alice Dineen, because David Rudman, who performs Janice, was unavailable and he wasn't able to be there for that. So David asked Alice if she would perform Janice for all of that. And then David, of course, will come back and ADR and loop the voice. And for the second Janice, that would be me.
Oh.
Of course, because they were full body, we also had a team of other puppeteers doing, you know, arms and legs and things.
Yeah.
So that was me and Alice doing the conversation.
So they had to do the conversation between the two. And then they also did all of the other, you know, ones behind. We doubled and tripled them in post, but you guys did like five different variations or something.
For sure. And totally.
And listening, different positions listening. And, you know, so it felt a little varied.
That's got all the way to the sound mix, and we were sitting there, both Bill and I were just like, I think that's Alice. Like,
I hear
still
Alice.
Hear layered in there somewhere was Alice. And they're like, no, we think we got it. And we're like, I don't know. And so like then they would silence all these other tracks, and then you just hear Alice clear as a bell.
There she is.
Totally.
Oh, that's right. That was the other thing, is when we first see her, and before and after that, she's going around, and I think in the version that's there now, she's like, oh, she looks in the mirror on the van's rearview mirror. You look so familiar, and she's saying a lot of different things, but on the day it was just totally over and over again. She would totally. I think she was just walking and saying, totally.
Yeah, the Janice sequence was one that we went through a lot to try to keep it sort of on point story.
So you all put words in her mouth
Can I just mention something? Maybe it's a little early, but I may forget. But there's a phrase that she keeps saying over and over that came much later, because we wanted to tie in the song. Jeff and Adam were talking about, how do we tie in the song that they come up with in the van on the way home? Gonna get there. And so
for which Janice has the chorus.
Right. Janice does the chorus. She comes up with the chorus. And so in those moments when she's in her thing, there's twice where she goes down the side of the bus and says, gonna get there. And she falls down and out. It happens twice. So that little thing.
Right, when she's dancing.
And the other one is when her back. Oh, is it when her back is to the other Janice and you said you're going to totally get there with your band?
Yeah, that's in there, right? And then also when she's Dr. Teeth's bit and she's kind of prancing by, right, and the camera pans over to her and she says,
the time lapse.
I'm going to get there. You know, she's.
Oh,
yeah. That's one of those things I noticed it, but only now on my third watch through. You know,
oh, right.
Now that I'm more familiar with the song. And it's like, oh, right. I'm putting those little pieces together.
You got it. Oh, that's great.
We're building something. Yeah.
The show makes sense on a fifth watch through.
Yes, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Once you get to like 8 or 9, that's when it really starts to pop.
It gets really good. Yeah.
It gets good.
Next up on our trip list is Animal. He is sitting on top of a rock, hallucinating that he's holding himself as a baby. This is great because the baby is speaking very proper, fancy, like, you know, like, we're quite fine, my gents, down in a jiff, you know. I assume that was in the script, that he speaks nothing like the real animal in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So performance wise, Peter,
you. So performance wise, that's a big giant, fiberglass rock. It's not actually, it's not that big and giant because Eric Jacobson and myself were stuffed inside of that rock. Eric is performing, doing the voice and all of a baby animal. And then I was performing Animal as we know it. And then, you know, Eric would give me a line read. Then of course he went back and dubbed it over with the proper voice. But yeah, we were all twisted up around each other inside that rock to make awful. Those two characters face each other with one on the lap and not have their faces too close. And so it was very comfortable.
Oh, I'm picturing the two of you stuffed inside that rock hugging while you perform. Just like having a good long hug.
Yeah. We were kind of recreating with our own bodies what was happening on camera.
For sure. Yeah.
Cradling.
Yeah.
Again, something that hit the cutting room floor, I'm so sad was not in there, is there's one point where Moog, I think, calls up, Animal, you okay, buddy? And Animal and baby Animal look down, and then we see Animal's point of view, and we see the Jabberwocky from the Brook Shields Muppet Show episode. The Jabberwock is there,
sure.
And you see Moog's voice coming out of it, Animal, you okay, buddy? And it's this amazing puppet, which is still functioning after all these years. It's been very well
pulled out of the vault.
A deep cut from the vault.
Cut, especially because that episode is not on Disney Plus. So a lot of newer fans might not recognize it. But I would have recognized it, and I would have thought that was really cool.
Alas, that puppet we shot the scene and it doesn't air that way. What happened, fellas?
I think it just got too crazy. I think it was just such a weird non sequitur. I mean, people were confused what was going on. It was, I guess, a hallucination on top of a hallucination. People were a little thrown.
And
went a little too far.
I think the way it was shot too didn't read as well.
Something was also true.
And I think we also rearranged the order of things.
Absolutely, we did.
So where Moog was, and it just bumped. And I think it was for time too. Like we had to get through all of these stories, you know.
But maybe if there's some deep cut outtake that shows up one day. It was really fun because Taj was there on set and I was lip syncing to his voice live.
Right.
And I think Leslie was doing the Jabberwock's claws, the hands, and Alice was on the feet, and we were all in green against this desert thing. And
an animal jumps off and attacks him.
That's right.
Yeah, that was the other thing. Right. Yeah.
Release the Jabberwock cut, guys. Come on.
Yeah, because that's right. Animal jumped onto Taj, right?
That's right. Animal attacks Taj.
Taj fell back. And,
Wow. I also have to ask, you know, this is something that's come up in a lot of conversation of the darker palette of the show. And we've got a whole sequence here that's taking place at night. So not only is it already darker than Muppet shows that we're kind of used to, and it's like there's no sun out to give us the natural light. This scene in particular with Animal and Baby Animal was like, I kind of had to turn the brightness all way up on my screen and squint a little bit. Was that a concern for you guys in the edit? I mean, not that I couldn't see it, but like, I wanted to see more of it. You know, it was not 100% clear. Was that a concern for you guys when you were editing?
I don't know. Was it a concern in the edit
for you guys? No, we did go through the color timing and to brighten it up a bit. I know we put a spotlight on Animal and Baby Animal and brought out the red a little more on him. When we were watching it, it wasn't,
because I've seen people talk about some of that stuff, or Christina will mention it to me, and I'm watching it on my two TVs at home, and it doesn't seem to me that it's overly dark. It feels real to me. Mm-hmm. It feels like you're really there. And I think that was the hope, is that it felt real. Although it, like Jeff said, there are certain things we brightened up, right? And tried to help it some, but I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah. This isn't a complaint. It's just a question of,
I get it. No, yeah. I'm not suggesting it. Yeah. I'm just saying because I was thinking, I'm looking at watching it at home and I'm thinking, what am I not seeing? It seemed okay to me, but I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. Next up, we have Floyd. He sees a big vortex open up in the sky, and he says, doesn't get any weirder than that, am I right? And it does get weirder because it's Weird Al Yankovic. The Weird Al, finally in a Muppet production. The only other time he's ever worked with the Muppets before this was appearing in an issue of Muppet Magazine in the 80s, yeah, which barely counts. I don't know why it took this long for him and the Muppets to cross paths, but we are very grateful for it. How did this come about?
Adam didn't work on anything. Adam, that's not true. I should say he should have been in Muppets Wizard of Oz, but he didn't get it. if Adam had something to do with it.
This was a crazy one. We knew we wanted someone who was iconic and prolific, and so when we hit on Weird Al, we're like, it has to be, right? It has to be Weird Al. And he was on tour. Ideally, we were going to have someone show up and be there with Floyd. But such was the problem with trying to make the show. The availability of, so many of the cameos was a very difficult thing. But we really needed Weird Al. Is there any way? Okay, we'll even do a green screen. It's either going to be a force ghost, right? Like a spirit ghost, right?
Yep.
Or it'll be Mufasa from The Lion King, if he's down to do it. So that way we can remotely set up a green screen and he could do it. And he was totally down. He was on tour. He was in, I think, upstate New York or something.
Yeah, I can remember. But thank goodness Adam knew him and had worked with him, had him on
his
show.
And one of our producers too.
So there was a good connection there. And he was a great sport about it.
Yeah, it was a day of a performance. And he just gave us multiple takes. We're like, look, we wanted two ways when we did Mufasa. We wanted all Mufasa, so really serious and James Earl Jonesy, and then one is Al. Like, hey, what are you doing? And he just gave for each of these. He gave multiple takes in multiple voices, essentially. And I just felt terrible for whoever was seeing him that night because he may not have had a voice.
So I actually saw him perform a couple days later. He was here in New York City, where I live, and. Yeah. I was Kermit the Frog was performing at Lincoln Center. He was doing something with choir. And, I got invited to come backstage and say hello to Matt. And I'm like, okay, but I got to run because I'm literally running to Carnegie Hall to see Weird Al right now. And he was like, oh, interesting, because we may have done a thing that I'm not allowed to tell you. And I'm going like, oh my God, you met him? And he's going, I didn't meet him. I'm like, okay, Matt, wink, wink, you didn't meet him. He's like, no, I actually never, I've never met the man. And I'm going, okay, I don't know if it's true or not that he was going to, at that time, he was being so cagey. But now I know, and I know all the secrets. Very cool.
Weird Al was at our premiere, and yeah, Matt was a little starstruck, I think.
Yeah, I would be.
At the premiere, yeah.
Yeah.
We all were. I got to, Maddie and I met him. Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
So I hope that means that you all have him on speed dial now and we'll get him in more Muppet projects.
Yes.
Matt and I. Oh, no. All right.
Yeah, he's on my phone in a series of selfies I took with him.
That he doesn't know about.
Hey, Mr. Al. Mr. Weird.
I didn't get that number.
Yeah. So anyway, Floyd has this whole great exchange with Weird Al. It's wonderful. It's very Lion King-y. It's great. And then as he disappears, a Muppet cactus appears behind him and notes that they did a Lion King thing, and Floyd gives him a big hug. And this cactus has a name, which is rare for a cactus. I think any cactus. His name is Davis.
Really?
Where does the name Davis come from?
That's what I call Dave Goals.
You call him Davis?
Mm-hmm.
Great. I have no follow-up
question. He calls me Willis. Just,
yeah.
He calls me Willis.
Willis and Davis.
I call him Davis.
That's a thing.
So did you come up with that on the day? Like, because you performed the cactus, correct, Bill?
Yeah. Yeah.
So were you just like, I'm going to
do
it?
I can't remember. I don't think it was in the script. Did we put the name in the script? No. I can't remember.
No.
And so I did it on the day.
You just threw that in.
Yeah. Just to needle Dave a little bit. Great.
I do remember a lot of discussion about what the cactus was going to be like with our production designer, because it wasn't an actual cactus found in Joshua Tree.
Right.
And we're like, it's okay.
Yeah, it's in his mind.
You got to love the attention to detail and the care and the
passion. This is why I hate this episode, because it's so unrealistic. You can never have a talking cactus like that in Joshua.
It really blew it.
So wait, is the cactus, to later when we see Floyd is hugging a cactus and it looks like a real cactus, is that type of cactus
that's
common?
Where it was.
Is that not Holland Joshua Tree, that type?
Oh, that one's not?
No, that was the discussion. I'm sorry, it wasn't the puppet that was going to the problem. It was the cactus he was going to be hugging. But that's not a real cactus, and that's found in Joshua Tree.
Right. I see. Right, but only because we only had the cactus puppet, right?
Based on the puppet, yeah.
Right. So we had to use a cactus that fit our puppet, right?
That's the real life Davis, yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
This is all in the new book, so you want to make a Muppet show?
Yeah, exactly.
Davis. The Davis cactus biography.
Wonderful! Davis. I can't wait.
The cactus story.
Any day now. Floyd is covered in needles from the cactus. I don't know anything about puppet building or puppet maintenance, but I would imagine that sticking a puppet full of needles is probably not a good thing for its longevity. Is that not a thing? You just like, screw it, we'll just put a bunch of needles in him and take him out and he'll be fine?
Peter, I don't know. Did you see him? Because I think what they did was, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think the needles that actually go into him are very thin. And the thicker thing is you know, it's an inch from, you know what I mean? It sticks in. It looks like they're bigger than they are going into the foam.
Yeah, the part,
I think they're very pin needle.
Peter, as Lips gets acupuncture in episode
two or three. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those needles in the space. But I think those are actual acupuncture. They're very, very small. I think they were.
They're really thin. Yeah, so it was that kind of thing, and then the cactus ones look thicker, you know. So it's...
Sure, yeah, that makes sense to me.
Doesn't mess him up too much, yeah.
And then we check in with Dr. Teeth. His trip is taking the form of a completely different medium. He is stop-motion animated. He can, take his head off and roll it around his arms. He gets trapped inside of a cage of giant piano keys, which turns out to be a big gold ring because he's trapped by Penny, who also shows up in stop motion animation, picks him up and throws him down.
The animation's done by Stop Motion Studios' Stupid Buddy, which is run by a couple of friends of mine. And so when we knew we were doing an animated sequence, we thought maybe we could go to them. I've cut their reels. I cut their studio reel, Stupid Buddy's Stupid Reel, to Dare to Be Stupid. So it all comes to play
right back to Weird Al.
Can you mention what they've done so people know?
Oh, sure. It's Robot Chicken. They do Robot Chicken. They do a ton of commercials. They do, let's see, Super Mansion. They've done the Lego Movie opening closing sequence.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Closing credits. But yeah, they're the kings of stop motion. And this was just amazing. We visited the studio while they were animating it.
Yeah.
Literally just a trip, you know, just to see these puppets in a different puppet form, you know?
Yeah.
These
yeah.
like 12-inch armatured puppets, and just see people like laboring over them. Mm. It was amazing. Their work was
incredible. That's cool. It's a great sequence.
Strange thing to give notes, you know? Like a note isn't an easy thing in the world of stop motion.
You got to start over.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yeah.
Puppeteers are impatient animators.
Like, I don't have the patience to be an animator. I want it to happen now.
Right. Your real-time animation.
Real-time animators. Yeah. Those guys are so patient. I also have some very dear friends who I would argue have the best stop motion company in Los Angeles.
All right.
That would be screen novelties.
Fight. I'm saying them, not us.
Yeah.
But a very slow fight, 1/3 of a second at a time.
Totally.
Yeah, you just have to do each move.
Speaking of which, how long, how long was the production process for just a few minutes of animation? Because I know you probably had to give them months, I would guess. I don't have any frame of reference, but you know, they can't just do it and they give it to you a few days later. They got to do it every second at a time.
But would you say it was a month or so?
I'd say like the first time we started to see pieces was probably maybe 3 weeks in, right? I think when we first started to see something, and then it was probably 6 weeks or something, maybe total.
They got the script. We had written it all out in script form. Then they give us back storyboards. And I think they gave it to us as an animatic. So drawing version of this scene, and that's their game plan on how they're going to animate it. And I think we had a few notes here and there, and then
and then they sent the characters so we could see what they looked the like. Builds. And Muppet Studios looked at the different pieces, and we all looked at those to, you know, to get those approved.
Right.
He didn't have his hunch, I remember. Right. Mm-hmm. So we asked them if they could give Teeth his hunch. You know, he's more straight up kind of thing, and just little things like that. But boy, they were amazing. They did.
Yeah, and then you would get these shots done, and you sort of have to view them out of context. But I mean, from
because we also did all of the dialogue first, right? So they were animating to the voices
dialogue.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Interesting. Well, when we cut back to the real world, Dr. Teeth is now embedded up to his waist in the sand. Moog is pulling on his arms and they stretch way out, which is the thing the old Dr. Teeth puppet used to do in the first season of The Muppet Show. And Moog, it's another great line reading. He's like, are they supposed to do that? That was great.
I'll just say, this is probably the moment I lost my mind. One time.
Why is that? Tell me more.
Can't believe you're going to go there, Bill.
Well, why not? I mean, I won't say what I said, but...
I have a meme of it if you'd like to see.
There is a meme that was created by the amazing Jurgen. But I was underneath this table, as we all do all the time. But under the table, Dr. Teeth through there, waiting, there's sand dropping. I'm underneath there, we're waiting, and there's all kinds of things going on, right? Cameras moving, trying to line up a shot, people crossing in front of it. I'm thinking we're ready to go. But there's conversations. I can hear people over here talking, giggling happening. There's all kinds of and I'm waiting. I'm just thinking, okay, this isn't going to be long. I'm good. I'm waiting there. And finally, I just snapped. I thought, nothing is really happening. We're all just kind of, I think we're all exhausted. People are trying to breathe for a minute. And I just thought, I'm still here, you know? And I lost it. And I screamed at the top of my lungs and it went silent. The place... The stage went silent. Jurgen looked at me like I was gonna, you know, kill him. He was underneath with me. Who else was down there? I can't remember. Maybe Leslie. And it just went quiet. Then all of a sudden, it was like, okay. And the cameras lined up, and everybody got in. A Ross Novi, our first AD, came under. Okay, we're gonna go now. Here we go. We're gonna go.
Everyone was, but it was extra nice to Bill after that.
I don't think I've lost it. Peter, have I lost it like that?
I've never seen you lose it like that. But it was deservedly so. It was late at night. You couldn't hear it underneath there. And it was super uncomfortable. Yeah.
And did you have your arm up the whole time? Were you stuck with your arm in there?
He was stuck inside. Yeah. I couldn't get out. Yeah. So anything that was taking a long time was just infuriating.
Because I didn't want all the sand to come in. You know, I was trying to keep it so we could, because I had already said, can we just like, let's get set and get ready. Because when I go in there, we don't want all the sand. You just got to go for it. I'll stay in there. We'll get through it. We'll do several takes. And they were like, okay, here we go. And then it was just like, people having chats, dog, camera moving.
No, everybody felt terrible. Nobody blamed them for losing it.
I'm glad to hear it's a rare occurrence, both for the annoyance and for the outburst. And you were able to move on and get a great shot of Dr. Teeth stuck in the sand with stretchy arms.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yes.
On the ride home, the band are all also feeling tired and maybe a little frustrated and unaccomplished here. But Floyd starts fiddling around with his guitar. Dr. Teeth joins in.
Lily, when she sits down with Moog, after everybody's had their experience, and she comes over and she sits with Moog, and she's supposed to be better, and she sees JJ sitting there in place of Moog, and then she gets up and she starts to fly around. It's so good. She did those bird noises on her own.
These chirps
and things, you know. And also we had talked about like how she's, is there something she could do that you don't recognize right away, but that you think she's still kind of having her hallucinations or something's going on, but not too much. And so we tried it at different levels. But if you notice, she kind of like licks her teeth a little bit, like she has like something's going on, you know.
Bill, how did you describe it to her?
Like hairy teeth or something.
It was like you have hair growing on your teeth, or
yeah, something like you have hairy teeth.
Yeah, and it was so specific and so weird. And she's like, "Oh yeah, no, I got it."
Yeah, she got it. Yeah. But we didn't use it that much. But it's just a hint there. Yeah. You'll see a little hint of her, like, you know, doing a little thing. But she's so good. She's amazing. So good.
She is. Yeah. But yes. But the band back in the vans, they just go ahead and. On the fly, Wright's gonna get there. Their new song. They've broken through to the other side, and they're done with their writer's block, and they can get back in the studio and record. While they're singing the song, Zoot is going through all of his Polaroids that he shot on the desert, and we see he got shots of all this weird hallucinatory stuff. You know, the multiple Janices, baby animal, Weird Al. Was it real? Is it just Zoot's reality? Who's to say? We can just leave that up to the audience. You're all nodding. Yeah. I assume that's the correct answer.
Yeah.
And it seems like everything's going pretty well for them. And then the doorbell rings. Nora goes to answer it. And who is it? It's Dr. Teeth's parents. They are here to take him home. Oh, it's a cliffhanger. Disney Plus is going to love this.
My kids watched this episode. They got to this point and they freaked out. They're like, we have to watch it. We have to keep going. We have to see what they look like. And I was like, oh, that's good.
It works. Good test audience. Good test audience.
Yep. If only this show was released week to week, that would have been such a great conversation to have for like a full week of like, what do you think? Yeah. What are they going to look like? Like, did you recognize the voice performers? Who is it?
I want to go back for 1 second and not to toot my own horn. But this was just such one of the greatest moments of working on the show was that I was able to co-write that Gonna Get There song. Linda was like, okay, I'm working on the song. And I had sort of listed what the songs were for each episode and sort of wrote out, here's the ideas. Here's sort of the imagery from the episodes. But for that one, I had sent over. I was like, I just was futzing around. Here are some lyrics.
Yeah.
And she came back onto a call one day and she's just like, okay, and then there's this song, Gonna Get There. Jeff, I loved your lyrics, so I used them. And right. I remember being on a Zoom and one of our producers, Chris Ebers, just like exclamation points, you know, private chat message to me. and it was amazing. It was just an amazing thing. And she turned into this, you know, my favorite song.
Well, and then you guys collaborated off of that meeting too, right? Didn't you kind of a little bit back and forth?
They were back and forth. I think one of the lyrics, you know, don't hit the brakes.
Made it better.
Had, like, and, it's going to be okay. Yeah. And I was like, don't hit the brakes again. It was just like, it's road trip imagery. Yeah. It's about being stuck. It's beginnings, middles, and ends. And writer's block. So it sort of does encompass everything that's going on in this episode.
And it sounds like an Electric Mayhem song. Like it's not just
in
a very song
weird way.
Singing.
It does, but it's a country song.
And
my wife loves country music and I don't, I mean, I do. But I'm not a huge country fan like she is. And she's like, you know, you wrote a country music song for the Electric Band. And I'm like, what? Oh, my God.
An electric country song, if that helps.
Yeah, totally.
A little bit.
Since I only get to do one of these, you get these chuckleheads for all 10. Can I give you a couple more Lips Easter eggs that I have not seen?
I was just going to ask you for that. Yes, please.
Okay. Well, there's several with his wardrobe. The first one I'll give you is he wears one T-shirt that says Eldon Elementary. And I don't know if you ever get to see it. I haven't actively looked for it, but there's an Eldon Elementary School. That's a reference to the street that the studio was on when they shot the Muppet Show. Is that, am I right?
Oh, am I getting this right? I don't know, Peter. I don't know that one.
That's a good Easter egg, if that's true.
Oh, Eldon. The Muppet Show's Eldon Avenue Studios. It is Eldon. There's one he wears. It's a circular emblem, and it says DeKalb, I think DeKalb County Brass Band Festival 1967. I grew up in DeKalb County. That's why DeKalb County in 67 was the year I was born. So nice. That's a cute one. And the big one that is definitely you can see, and I think some folks have found it very recently, he has a T-shirt that says Tutter Street Trumpet Company, which is a nod to my character Tutter from Bear in the Big Blue House. And actually, even on the T-shirt, embedded, if you take a freeze frame or take a picture of the screen, zoom in real close, you can see a little blue Tutter.
Yeah, we spotted the Tutter one just the other day, and we are very tempted to make some of our own in human size, not just lip size. It'd be a really deep cut. Incredibly talented
Danny Iglesias, see if she would do something like that for us. She designed all of Lips's T-shirts.
I know we only have Peter for this one, and I've said it to him before, but what he did with Lips is just amazing. It's just such a delight, and nothing we couldn't have been prepared for what you brought to this character. Mm-hmm. I hope we get a season two, if only to just have more of Lips and, you know, this characterization. Just a blast. And I could tell already fans love him, as I think I was promising you, like, you know, Peter.
You promised me, but I was nervous because this is kind of uncharted territory, taking a Muppet character that people kind of know. I mean, not everybody, but the fans know for sure. And how are they going to react to this kind of, you know, completely?
They love him.
There was just like a knee-jerk response. I remember, like, people are like, "What? I don't know about this mumbling thing."
I remember that from the D23 performance. Yeah, I don't know about this. Yeah.
I will say, like, coming from the fan perspective, you know, number one, we were afraid of change. Change is scary. Not that the Muppets don't have a history of that. You know, Janice specifically, we're talking about Mayhem. It went through a huge change in her first year. But the thing I was worried about was, will mumbling get old? Like, is it the same joke over and over again?
Yeah.
Peter, you are a talented enough performer that you've never repeated the joke. Like, every time you do it, it's something completely different, which makes me, to Jeff's point, really excited for a potential season two or whatever's next for Lips, to see, like, where's he going to take it next? What else is he going to do? What else is he going to say? How else can we play with this new toy of his mumbling? So yeah, like that. That's, I think, lovely. He did a wonderful job.
I'm gonna go back to another thing with Lips. I now judge all Muppet Mayhem merchandise, or just Electric Mayhem merchandise, by if they include Lips or not.
Bless you.
Before Muppets Mayhem and after Muppets Mayhem.
Jeff, to your point, yeah, right. Any Mayhem merch that doesn't have Lips in the band.
Yeah, I mean, there's some amazing imagery and great T-shirts, but I'm just like, well, I'm only gonna buy something if it has Lips on it. Part of the band.
We got into the backstories for a couple of the characters on this season, but we didn't get into the backstory of Lips. I'm not going to ask Jeff and Bill what they have in mind. Obviously, if we get a season two, we hope to see that. But for you, Peter, did you have a headcanon of where Lips comes from or what he did before the band? And you don't have to tell me about it. I'm just curious if you have like a backstory in your mind.
No.
Okay.
There is the dreadful honest answer.
That's okay. Yeah, that's all right. Lips is a cipher. He's a blank slate.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's growing as I'm growing, and he did, like these guys said, as we were shooting the series. I learned more about him as we went along. I don't have formal training as an actor. I mean, I make my living doing it, but I didn't. It's
you're a natural.
Yeah. That's okay. Right. That's all right. Nobody's nerfect. It's fine.
I don't know how to do process and, you know, what the steps are supposed to be. I'm sorry.
You're just pacing before takes, just smelling lemons and stuff like that.
Yeah. Basically, I walk into a room and I am Lips. I prepare.
Right. You're very method. Peter, thank you so much for being here. It was such a treat to get to talk about Lips with you and to really dive into this episode with you. And thank you for all the work you did for Muppets Mayhem. It really, everything came out so wonderfully, and Lips is such a joy. So great job.
Thank you. I had so much fun. This is one of my most favorite jobs in the history of me having a professional career in puppetry. 31 years. There wasn't a day I wasn't super excited to go to work on this show. I just absolutely loved every moment of it. And I'm thrilled with the final result, and so grateful to Bill and Jeff and Adam and everyone who had a hand in creating the series.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Yes. Well, and thank you, Bill and Jeff, for being here as well. We'll see you again next week on Muppets Mayhem Backstage Pass. The Muppets Mayhem Backstage Pass is brought to you by ToughPigs.com. Produced, written, and hosted by Joe Hennis. Logo art by Dave Hultin Jr. The Muppets Mayhem mark and logo, characters, and elements are trademarks of The Muppets Studio. All rights reserved. Transcriptions provided by Katie Lynn Miller. The Muppets Mayhem end credits written by Mick Giacchino is used with permission. Special thanks to The Muppets Studio, Disney Plus, and the entire Muppets Mayhem family. For more from ToughPigs, find us at ToughPigs on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon. Thanks for listening, and until next time, rock on!